This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Baby, I'm home.
Well, thank you so much, Parker, and welcome to Time Signatures. I'm your host, Jim Irvin. You know, we keep finding great folks to talk to on this program. Most of them are musicians, but some serve in other areas, such as the world of art. And today's guest has his feet firmly planted on both sides of that fence. In 2001, this painter or designer founded a company known as MojoHand.com, the website affiliated with the business, and his work showcases and celebrates his love for the blues. It's music that he plays and loves to listen to. His paintings have been exhibited in dozens of states. He has crafted images for major label CD covers, magazines, ad campaigns, and gig posters, among things. Everything you see on the website is his creation, making MojoHand.com one of the coolest sites on the internet today. And as we noted, this gentleman is also a gifted musician. There's lots to talk about here, so let's welcome our guest, Greg O. Anderson. Welcome to Time Signatures, sir. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, and let me just begin by stating the obvious, at least to you, Greg O. I absolutely love the vibe and the look of your posters. If you look over my shoulder right there, you can see that I have one of those up there right now, I believe it's Guitar Lessons at the Crossroads poster. One of my favorites of the many that I've purchased from your site. But I have to ask you, how long have you been involved with art?
Well, I taught myself how to draw pictures in my parents' basement when I was in fourth grade.
Okay.
Using A&W placemats with Daffy Duck on them. I went through an entire ream of paper drawing this same picture of Daffy Duck on a surfboard. And in the beginning, it was terrible. And then by the time I got through a whole ream of paper, it was passable.
Okay.
And ever since then, I've been chasing that dragon.
Man. Now, you have a very distinct style in your work, and kudos on that. But did you start out to create MojoHand.com, or did it just sort of fall together for you?
That kind of fell together for me. I mean, I'd been I've always called myself an art mercenary, right? I was a graphic designer. I went to college for that.
Okay.
And I was an illustrator. And then I ended up in Boston back in about 1992. Maybe it was a little later. The original House of Blues was there in the square. The square, as they, you know, however they talk down there.
Yeah.
And that's the first place I ever saw folk art. Southern blues folk art, you know, paintings on... You know, I imagine there was some Jimmy Suddeth or whoever it was down there. And I was just fascinated by it. I'd always loved everything Southern anyway. I mean, I grew up in Northern Michigan, but my dad was a teacher and also an antique dealer. He would drive us to Florida for Christmas break so we could, you know, get out of the snow. But man, we stopped at every antique store and flea market that there was. And I saw a lot of Southern things. And I just loved it. I just loved the idea of art looking like just regular people painted it because they either needed it or they just wanted something on their wall. You know, there was no Amazon. So, I mean, you know, you wanted decoration and you didn't have money. You decorated it yourself. And it
right.
It's always stuck in my mind. So I worked hard to try and come up with my own take on what would be considered a primitive, you know, style of art, I guess. I mean, it makes it sound like I degrade it in a way, but that's not the case at all. I mean, I just love it. I used to go down with my wife. We would go to Mexico, and I would take pictures of every hand-painted menu board on the side of a restaurant. You know, just to see the way a guy painted a taco was fascinating to me. I'd be like, this is so cool.
When I first discovered your work, I didn't realize that it was a guy, just a guy, you know, that's doing all this. I looked at it and I'm thinking, man, that reminds me of New Orleans, you know? And it's like it just clicked as soon as I saw it. And then I found your website, because originally I think I found a poster for sale for some ridiculous price that you created, and they bought, and they thought, well, I'm going to just triple the money, you know?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I was all set to pull the trigger and buy it, and then I stumbled on your website, and I went, ah, never mind, I don't want it. But I love the style that, like you said, the Southern style of it all, and it's fun. I mean, you've got some really cool things on the website and some really amazing posters, and so, as you know, I told you I have several on the wall here. I have one right now of yours, but I rotate some 11 by 17s and 12 by 18s occasionally, and so I like to bring your posters in and other posters that I've collected, and it's just, it's one of the things that sets my show apart from others. But talk about the first time that your work got some major attention. What was the item you created, and what happened?
Well, somehow I stumbled into people being able to find my website really quick, and that was before it was Mojohand. Originally, I had one called artbygrego.com, and I was living in Austin at the time, and there was a little folk art gallery on South Congress, which is a real big music street and tourist street. And I just carried 12 paintings in there, and it was actually made on leftover fence planks I had. I was rebuilding the fence in the backyard, and I had a bunch of extra wood. That's how this whole thing started, was extra wood. And did these paintings. A couple of friends came over to the house, said, oh, these things are great. You should take them down there. I took them down there. They all sold, and it's like 10 days.
Wow.
And I was like, all right, well, I better start a website so I don't have to give this guy 50% of the revenue, because that's there's an art gallery deal for you.
Sure.
That's not how this works. So consequently, I'm not in any galleries anymore. I sell everything myself. You know, from there, a guy from Houston was filming a Lightnin' Hopkins documentary.
Okay.
He saw my paintings in that gallery, got in touch with me. Next thing you know, I'm in a documentary called Where Lightning Strikes with B.B. King and Jimmy Vaughn and all these people. And it was just like that. It was like all this stuff. Now, of course, I'm in the blues genre, so it is not a get-rich-quick thing. It's a stay-poor-quick thing, right? I always tell people, hey, I draw pictures and play guitar for a living, so I'm poor twice. Right? That's the secret to it.
Right? There you go. Now, many of your subjects have passed from the scene, but you don't shy away from creating posters with the likeness of musicians such as Buddy Guy or even one of today's hottest guitarists, Christone Kingfish Ingram. How do these musicians respond to your work, man?
Well, you know, I mean, all those were actually four gigs. You know, I was with, in some way, I had a relationship with the venue itself. If they've got someone coming in, and just like you, you know, they found me through a website, and they're like, hey, I see you do gig posters. And then we strike up whatever deal I can strike up, which is usually not particularly in my favor, but it's still fun anyway. And, you know, the only way to get your name out there and get exposure is not just for artists. Sometimes you also die on the side of a mountain from it. But,
yep.
You know, I have to do it. And plus, you know, anything I can do to help these guys get more butts in the seats is, it's a win for the blues. And I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't love the genre, even though I don't play it as much as I used to anymore. I've kind of gone into a singer-songwriter thing. But, you know, I was fortunate when I was in Austin that there's so many great venues there. Like, we had everybody came through. You know, I was doing posters down at the Green Hall and for Antones, and the roster of talent that would come through. We had posters from everyone from Van Morrison to, you know, Jimmy Vaughn to Buddy Guy to Hubert Sumlin. I just lucked into things. I don't know if I was just in the right place or if I just talked louder than everybody else until they let me do it.
Okay. As you're talking here, talking about doing posters for venues, we've got a gentleman up here. His name is Dennis Preston. And Dennis has done some work, a lot of work for a couple of places. Most of them are no longer in operation, but his stuff was back in the late 60s, early 70s. And he did some Muddy Water posters, and he did, there was a few others that he did that he was talking about, but I actually had a chance to interview him as well. And it's amazing because I was looking through eBay one day and I don't have it on my wall right now, but I found a poster that was encapsulated on a little piece of metal. And yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Have you ever had any of your stuff show up like that?
I have had, I've had to take legal action 3 times.
Okay, all right.
Right now, there's about 10 things on Temu. There's a guy that's ripping me off on Amazon.
Oh, geez.
I send out cease and desists. I probably spend 5 hours every month being my own attorney.
Yeah.
And, you know, that doesn't pay anything. All I can
right.
do is get them to stop. And then they just change their name and do it somewhere else. It's like trying to plug 11 holes in a boat with your hands. There's always one hole leaking somewhere. And so it's
sure.
just, I'm trying to just fend it off. But, you know, so many things are made in other countries that have, we don't have a trademark treaties with. Musicians have been dealing with it forever, you know, for a long time over there in Italy.
Yeah.
They had a really interesting, lax copyright thing. So, and I didn't even realize that when I was younger and I was buying those Italian import, you know, compilations all the time. I'm sure some of them weren't bootlegs, but a lot of them must have been.
Yeah, I don't want to say too much. I got a vinyl collection over here, and I've stumbled on a couple that are very collectible bootlegs that happened to cross my path. And I went, yeah, okay. I just, you know, hold my nose. And
well, you know, they've already been made. It's not
right,
like,
right.
Yeah.
You know, if it wasn't for the fact that it was a Hendrix album, okay? And there was a gentleman here that had a copy in Michigan that was selling one, and he was just out to see how much he could get for it. Well, mm-hmm. long story short, these things are going for anywhere from $150 to $500 an album or a piece of vinyl. It's ridiculous the amount of money that they can generate off of these because they're not being made anymore. But anyway, speaking of worldwide here, Grego, how many countries have you sent posters and other pieces of art to? I'm just curious about that. I see you ship all over the place.
Yeah, at one point I had a graphic that I had on the original website where I had it, and I don't know, I think I was up into the 30s at that time, and I'm sure it's probably a little bit more than that now. You know, it's strange sometimes, you know. And for a while, I was selling a lot of things to Russia for a while, and then all of a sudden I wasn't allowed to ship there anymore from some of the people that I ship with. That
okay.
it's like, everybody behave. If you want the blues, you have to behave as a country.
There you go. There you go. Now, I love that you've been involved in creating some event posters, as we've talked about already here. Something that I'm sure becomes a very high demand collectible. Just out of curiosity, any favorites along the way that you've done posters for?
Oh, well, that's actually a pretty tough question. I mean, I was hand silk screening in my garage in Texas for a while because I was in the silk screen business. And I did do some hand pulled stuff for the House of Blues out in LA, I think. We did I don't think it was called a harmonica rumble, but you know, it was one of those where you get 4 or 5 great harmonica players. Kim Wilson was part of it. James Harmon was. I can't even recall, you know, but it was a really cool poster, and I just loved the way it turned out. I did one of Gate Mouth Brown like that for Antones in Austin that I really loved. And it was I actually just did this little scribble drawing of him on a napkin. It was probably like this big, and I blew it up really large and then, you know, messed with it in the computer. But I loved that one. It's probably not the best piece of art I ever did. It's probably not even the top 10,000 pieces of art I ever did. I like it, you know. I think just because it was such a weird idea of mine, I'm just going to scribble it. That's your poster.
You know, in addition to all of the art that you've been creating through the years, you're also a musician, as we mentioned at the top of the episode. Talk about your brand of music, Grego. Is it all blues, partially blues, or where you at?
You know, when I got started, I taught myself how to play guitar. I didn't buy one until I was in my 20s, and I got to Austin like 23, 24. And I was still in the process of getting my career going as an artist, so like I couldn't really, you know, when you're working 40 hours a week and married, I had stuff to do besides mess around with the guitar. But by the time I got into playing in bands in the 30s, I had friends that were Grateful Dead guys, And I told him I didn't like the Grateful Dead, which is it's accurate. Sorry to anyone out there. It's just just me. However, I was unaware that they had done covers of a ton of blues songs. And so these guys tricked me, more or less. Said, oh, well, it's just a Big Bill Brunzi song. It's just, and I'm like, sweet, I love this band. And then, you know, but it turned out it was a jam band, but I'm just playing blues stuff all over it. And then after that, I got into a little band with my buddy Jeff Hayes. He had a band up in Minneapolis called the Big Bang.
Okay.
Discovered Johnny Lang. Their guitar player was giving Johnny guitar lessons when he was like 14.
Wow.
14. And then they invited him to be in the band. And then, of course, it took off and they were the biggest thing in Minneapolis for a while. And then, of course, the record label came in and said, well, Johnny, we want to sign you, but we don't need those guys. So he was my bass player and one of my best friends from back in Austin. And I was in a band with him for a few years. And that was kind of a blues R&B thing. We had a great female lead singer named Joanna Ramirez. And then after a 5-year run of that, I started my own kind of like little Lightnin' Hopkins-y / Delta blues kind of mesh trio.
Okay.
And that was probably the most fun I ever had. I led it. I played drums with my feet, lead guitar, and I had a harp player and a bass player. Loved it. Moved down here to Florida. Could not find that same level of talent. I mean, they're here.
Yeah.
There's not as many, so they're in such demand, I couldn't just grab them.
Okay.
And, I'd always been a big fan of writing songs. And when you're in Austin, you get this real hybrid musical education. Old country, rockabilly, Lightnin' Hopkins, Texas blues, and then the guitar slinger, Texas blues, right? So
Right.
And so I learned all those licks and those that way to play. And so my singer-songwriter stuff, it sounds like I'm still in Austin. Right? A lot of alternating bass, like the old country guys, but
sure.
There's blues licks everywhere, Lightnin' Hopkins rakes and all these little things, and I stole it all. I'll be the first one to tell. I don't think I've ever invented anything that I'm doing, but it's going over real, real well down here in the little tiny town of Gulfport, Florida. And
good.
It's a lot good. Of fun.
As you just alluded to, we were talking about Austin, Texas, and now Florida. Website says that you're still based in Austin, but you recently made a relocation, didn't you?
I did, and you know, I would fix that website up, but I still haven't figured out how to do it. I had somebody program part of that in there, and I just had her do a bunch of updates on it. I completely forgot to be like, how do I change this?
Yeah,
I'll get around to it. It's somehow hard coded into the footer of that thing, and I don't know how to do it. But we got down here 18 months ago. My wife and I, it was just that time, and her son had got, you know, over the age of 21, and he was spreading his wings, and she was like, okay, I can leave him alone a bit, you know, and let him succeed and fail on his own. He's doing great. But we wanted to get down to the water, you know, and that was really the big draw. And the weather down here, when the hurricanes aren't trying to kill you, of which we've already been through three.
In 18 months?
18 months, yeah. One of them fortunately skipped past us, but two dropped right on us. Gulfport flooded out twice. We lost four trees in the last one. Stayed up all night long fighting floodwaters just from the rain, trying to come into the house. I was out there with a squeegee trying to save my office. Guitars were up on top of the refrigerator.
Wow.
People do really strange things, and but we wouldn't go back and change a bit of it. I mean, it's what we're doing.
Obviously, you must have a home that's hurricane-proof to some degree.
Well, I mean, it was built in 1953, and it's still here.
So I assume
we're 31 feet above sea level, so we're about a mile from the bay.
Okay.
And about 5 miles from the barrier island. So, I mean, we're fine from that. But, you know, we had I can't even remember. It was a Cat 4, so I can't remember what the wind speed on that was. But I was out in the lanai during it trying to push water back down the hill, and a couple gusts would come through and about knock me over. So they're legit. Like, I put plywood on all the windows and everything, just like everyone does.
you didn't have any misgivings about making the move there, even going through two of those that hit.
Nope. No.
Okay.
No. I'm one of those people, I make a decision and I signed up for it. My folks are up there little north of Big Rapids.
Okay.
Not all the way to Reed City, a little place at the village of Hersey.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, lives up there too, and my nephew and her husband, and you know, it's I still love the area. And if it didn't snow, I don't know that I'd ever left. But I'm not mean cold.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, we had a real taste of winter this year. A lot of cold, quite a bit of snow. I know that there's places up in the UP that are 270 inches of snow already for the season.
And those different people up there, man.
Yeah. There's
some strong people up there.
That's putting it mildly. But hey, returning to your website for just a moment. Now, I see that you've got all sorts of cool items there. You've got some music available. Where can people go to learn more about Greg O. Anderson, maybe pick up some art, some posters, some music, and some other cool things like, well, I don't have it in here. Doggone it, I dropped the ball. My can koozie, my favorite can koozie, it's normally sitting right here showing mojohand.com every time I do an episode. And the one time you're on, I don't have it. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I run probably one of the larger Facebook blues groups that there is. I think we're almost up to 50,000 people now. And I post on that, geez, like 15 times a day, rare blues photos. And I chat with all sorts of people. And that is facebook.com/everythingblues. And it's just called Mojo Hand. Like if you just type that in, you'll see it. My logo's the little profile picture. And there's some legendary folks that are on there all the time chatting. Bob Margolin is on there.
I love Bob.
I've had so many. I got to open up for him one time at Antone's, and it was the coolest thing, right? I'm up there winding cables, and he's up there telling me stories about Muddy Waters on the bus, you know, and I'm in Antone's. I'm thinking, man, I don't feel like I paid my dues to be having this conversation, but it's the greatest thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's an excellent place to go. You know, I'm on there all the time. And, of course, just visiting mojohand.com, I mean, there's so much stuff to look at on there. You could go there for 45 minutes.
Easily.
Just mess around. And I think I'm going to have some new T-shirts finally come out in the next 2 or 3 months. Sales went down so bad selling T-shirts because there's a lot of bootleg.
You know, oh God!
And I'm not going to say their names so that none of us get into trouble, even though I have some legal dealings with them as well. Because you know they found a way to allow other people to violate intellectual property law. Let's just say that's the easiest thing I could say.
I got snookered one time. They delivered, and it really—I'm just going to say it the way I feel it. It pissed me off. And the reason why is because it's one of the organizations that I have a reverse sponsorship with, and that is the Killer Blues Headstone Project.
Yeah.
And I bought 4 T-shirts, and I bought a coffee mug, and I can't remember, I bought something else. It was like $150 that I spent because I thought I was giving to the Killer Blues Headstone Project, and I was supporting their efforts, okay? For those of you that don't know who the Killer Blues Headstone Projects are, they go and find, it's Stephen Salter, a gentleman all by himself, started this mission of finding musicians, blues musicians that are buried in unmarked graves. And over the last 16 years, they've got like 150 or so headstones out there, and it's all done through donations. So anytime I see an opportunity to help with that, of course, I'm willing to do it. Then I found out that it was these stinkers. And I got to tell you, I was not a happy camper. I wrote to these people and I told them what I thought of them. And I told Steven, I said, I will make this right and make a donation at least in that amount because I thought I was helping you. And he felt bad, but he said, yeah, it happens all the time.
Yeah, you know? It's the internet is still the Wild West when it comes to, it's just nonstop scams. And it's not even people in the United States, right?
Yeah.
I mean, almost every time I finally track down who's responsible for uploading the images, they're in other side of the world. That's that
Yeah.
I want to single out any country, because it's just random people. It's not the country, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, Grego, it has indeed been a pleasure to have you on today. Much continued success to you. I love your work. In fact, I'm looking forward to having a cool creation at your hand that I can unveil here on Time Signatures eventually.
We'll get
And
to it.
we will unveil it and let people know where they can order them as soon as they're available. Actually, Dennis Preston is going to be working on one for my show as well. But
Nice.
again, many thanks for being here today, sir.
All right. Thank you so much, Jim. I appreciate it.
All right. As you look across this really cool backdrop of my podcast, I want you to notice the logo for Keeping the Blues Alive Foundation. KTBF was founded by Joe Bonamassa, and they do so many incredible things. Among them, their Fueling Musicians program started during the height of COVID, where they send $1,500 checks to help musicians by providing financial support for living expenses such as food, shelter, and also more to help musicians educate music educators and industry professionals get back on their feet. And KTBA Records, a record label that has helped the likes of Joanna Connor, Larry McRae, and Dion DiMucci, just to name a few, get their recording careers back on track. Now, if you get a chance, please consider making a tax-deductible donation to Keeping the Blues Alive, won't you? I would appreciate it. A link will be provided in the information section on this podcast channel, and let's do our part to help this foundation keep thriving so that it can continue to help musicians do what they love to do for us. Thank you so much for your consideration. And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to Greg O'Anderson for his time, but also to you, for if it weren't for you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you that keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time is my mission. Until next time, so long, my friends.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on CABS, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham. Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.